Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
I just stuck my gum under the table. No, I didn't bring a gun. Gum.
Fantastic. Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. I think it's episode 87. We're here with Joshua D. Scroggin from the San Luis Obispo Tribune. Hey, JD.
Hey, Owen. How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for being on. We're happy to have you here, and there's a lot going on right now. It's a kind of a double season for the next 3 weeks at Cal Poly.
Yep.
There's men's basketball, women's basketball. There's baseball. There's softball, tennis. What am I missing? Wrestling is still happening. You got a lot going on.
It's all the crossover from the winter sports to the spring sports. And February, March is the busiest time of the entire calendar year for me, having to keep track of all of that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I would think that there's a time when, like, football and soccer is happening at the same time, both men's and women's soccer, where they can have, you know, like, four games on a weekend between football, men's and women's soccer, and it can sometimes all be at Spanos, so you feel like you're in that Spanos press box a lot of the time. But right now, I mean, these games are happening all over the place, in all different places, Bagot Stadium, Janssen Field.
Yeah. Well, you know you're spending a lot
Athletic Center.
You know you're spending a lot of time in places when it pops up on your phone on Google Now and it says, Mott Gym, do you care about this place? If so, click yes. You know, like, it'll pop up. Bagot Stadium, do you care about traffic, to how long it takes to get to this place?
Really? It asks you that on Google.
Yeah, because I just spend a lot of time at those places. It'll pop up on my phone. It'll say, do you care about this place? And it'll be Mott Gym. It'll be Bagot Stadium.
Is that a uniquely Android user experience, I wonder?
I guess. I've never had an iPhone.
Yeah.
I don't know. iPhone
might ask. My iPhone doesn't ask me that.
No.
So it must be like a Google.
Google Now.
Google's trying to take over.
Yeah. They already took over me, I guess, because that's all I've had.
Absolutely. So we're happy to have JD here for this episode. And I really wanted to have him in just because there's so much going on at Cal Poly. We haven't had him on in a while. And I know we talked a little bit about, from a fan's perspective, the Cal Poly men's basketball game, the one at Irvine, or against Irvine at home. It was a blackout game. I think really momentum-wise, it was kind of one of those games where they were either going to get some momentum or kind of be who maybe they are, unfortunately, this year, as far as the type of team that they are, their ability or inability to score on the offensive end. I mean, they're always going to be, from a ball control standpoint, they're always going to kind of be in games if they're ahead or if they're behind, excuse me. But the flip side of that is that the other team's always in games generally if they're ahead as well, because there's so few possessions that happen on both sides. And Cal Poly, while efficient at times offensively, doesn't really get a lot of points in the end. They've scored under 60 in a lot of their conference games this year. I thought a turning point this year, and we haven't talked in a while, so I can kind of speak about the Big West Conference season in general. They started off 3-0, the men's basketball team. They lost at home to Long Beach, which wasn't a surprise to me. I picked Long Beach at the beginning of the year. You talk about my bold predictions. That was one that I had.
That was a crazy prediction, though. Like,
was
that
it?
Wasn't rooted in, like,
no,
like,
that was
serious.
Yeah, no, I was serious about that. Well, I printed it.
Oh, no, you were serious. But, like, that wasn't an informed prediction, I don't think. Long Beach State, because they had lost. Yeah, they had been one of the teams, if not the team, in the past few years. Because, you know, they had that group, that very veteran good group, and last year they wasn't exactly a veteran group, but last year they had a very good group of D1 transfers
with
that were
Ennis,
very good.
Yeah,
and Ennis, and then you know, they kind of fall apart for them in the offseason. They had a bunch of guys, you know, removed from the team, and so they brought in all these mercenary type guys, and it was going to be like, you know, their ability to kind of mesh a lot of different new people together, and you can't have confidence in that. If you did, I'm saying that it's luck.
Is it silly? Is it silly confidence?
It's
Here's the thing. I don't count out Munson, number one, to be able to do something like that. I think if anybody in the conference can, I think he has the mentality where guys are going to get together and play hard and play as a cohesive unit at some point during the season. I think Cal Poly even beat Long Beach in Cal Poly last year, and Irvine beat Long Beach in the tournament in the semifinals last year. One of the nastiest dunks I think I've ever seen in person was Davis's dunk on somebody on Long Beach, man. It might have been Jennings. It might have been somebody else. But, man, and Will, our photographer down there, got, like, the perfect picture of it. I mean, it's just, like, Skywalker kind of a dunk, kind of an emphatic exclamation point on Irvine's trip to the the conference final, the tournament final last year. But I really count on Munson to be just solid that way. I think that – I think
That little tangent you went on about the dunk, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
No, but it's
where, I'm listening to it now and I'm like, wait a second.
It's just how my mind works. There was no point to that. Yeah, and I got back around at some point. It's just how my mind works because it left such a... I mean, if you haven't seen it, it's on our Facebook page somewhere. You can kind of search through for it.
The dunk?
The dunk.
That we're going back to the dunk
picture,
now?
Yeah.
Okay.
It obviously left an impression on me.
Munson's a great coach.
I would call him
before you go to number two, yeah. I would call him the best coach in the Big West right now.
Yeah, I think. Yeah. I think, yeah. And I think number two, you get Tyler Lamb coming in December. And while Long Beach had kind of a crummy preseason, they played a really tough schedule. I think the toughest in the country or the top three toughest in the country in the preseason. And while a team like Cal Poly...
It was top five, definitely, if I remember.
While a team like Cal Poly played like a top 10 or 20 schedule in the preseason, they haven't responded like Long Beach has, I think. I think Long Beach has somehow, you know, allowed it to make them tougher. I know that was the goal for Poly. But getting a kid like Tyler Lamb right after you lose all those games, you can say, okay, there's something substantially different than when we played those games. Now we have this guy who's a top-level recruit out of high school from UCLA who we have for 2 years now, or a year and a half, or whatever he's going to get out of him. I think he's only a junior this year. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I looked it up the other day, and I was like, oh, man, we got to see him again next year. He is very good, and he's the kind of player in a tournament game that's gonna carry a team to at least one tournament win, I feel like, because of his poise, where he's played before, his experience, and his skill level. It's just kind of at a higher level than most of the other guys in the Big West. I mean, offensively, you think about a kid like Hawkins probably as being one of the only other skill level guys. Are you looking that up now?
No. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Don't mind me. Don't look over here. Don't look behind the curtain. What does the Wizard of Oz say?
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Pay no attention to the smartphone under the table. No, that's not what I'm looking up, though. Okay. Just FYI.
Right. So Munson's really good, and I think I had them pegged. But I wanted to get your take because there were two games that I thought Cal Poly really kind of fell off the wagon with, I guess. One game would be the game at Riverside where they had the lead. Nobody really was doing anything offensively. Ridge Shipley gave a little bit of a spark, but they still let Riverside come back and win that game in a game that Cal Poly probably shouldn't have lost and probably looks back on and sees it as a missed opportunity. The other one is the UC Davis game at home when the team still came home, I think, 4-2 in conference with a chance to go to 5-2. And they lost to Davis, who's possibly the worst team in the conference, definitely one of the bottom three. And now you go to 4-3, and then you have other tough games. You lose to Irvine. You're 4-3. Now instead of being 5-2 or 5-3, you're struggling to be around 500 in conference. It's a big difference, and those two games are going to make the difference in the seed they get. And now they're going to have to play one of the other top five teams in the conference in the first round of the tournament. If they think they're one of the top five teams, they're going to have to play one of the other ones because I don't see them getting better than a 4 seed in the conference at this point.
Yeah, that run was just ridiculous for Cal Poly because they were 3-0. They were looking to go 4-0 for the first time in program history in the Big West. They lost that close one to Long Beach. It was at the buzzer, right? Was that the game at the buzzer that Jamal missed the runner going full court?
Yeah, but they shouldn't have been in that position. Long Beach missed some free throws and turned the ball over once or twice. Cal Poly was down by like 8 2 minutes left. So I mean, that wasn't a game that
The magic, though. They could have pulled that one out, but they didn't. It's not necessarily negative that they lost it,
no,
I guess,
that was okay.
Because Long Beach has proven to be a decent team. They're tied for third. I was looking up the standings because I wanted to make sure I knew what I was talking about. See, we were talking about, you know, in the other podcast, how I only talk about what I know is going to be right. I'm not gonna throw out and say
they
Long
should
Beach
be.
Is tied for second place if I don't really know what they are.
There.
Long Beach is they are 7-4. They're tied with Hawaii for third,
and in first and second are Irvine and Santa Barbara.
Correct.
And then Hawaii is tied for third. You said
yes. So that run,
and then Poly's in fifth.
Yes, at 5-6.
Yeah, so that's the top
five
teams.
They're half a game ahead of Fullerton.
Right.
So, but Pauley at that point was like the front runner.
Yeah.
They were looking good. They have that one little, you know, hiccup against Long Beach that you don't think it's going to make a big deal. Then they go on the road and they lose at Riverside.
They barely beat Fullerton, a really ugly game.
Yeah, they beat Northridge, too, in that run. And Northridge was one of the better teams in the non-conference.
They beat them in their third game of the season at home.
Uh-huh. They beat UCSB, which was one of the best teams in the conference. They beat Hawaii, which had the best record in the non-conference. Yeah. So, like, and it's shown, too, that UC Santa Barbara and Hawaii have stayed contenders in the conference. So Cal Poly was not bad. They're obviously good.
Right.
Then they go on the road. They lose to Riverside, which was in last place. That bumps Riverside into next to last place. Then they lose at home to Davis, who was in last place, but then moved up over Riverside with that win. So they lose. They're losing to the last place teams.
Brutal.
And yeah. And you're like, wait, you just beat the two first place teams. Now you're losing to the two last place teams. Yeah. So it's really hard to like figure out what's going wrong with Cal Poly. What is the problem? Because they're obviously you go by some of the games and there's no problem. Now they're on this run where they're kind of in the middle of the pack, and you know, what are they going to do the rest of the season? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think
it's hard
beating
to tell.
UCSB and beating Hawaii and having those, you know, in your sort of briefcase of confidence or whatever, you know that when you get to the Big West tournament, if you run into those teams, you have a shot. You can beat them.
So, it's all about matchups, though, right?
Yeah, it's all about getting to the tournament and then who you face when you're there. And
how you match up. And I think for Cal Poly, just really how they shoot that day. I think if Reese Morgan, who's been back, who came back the last game they played, if he can be there and be even kind of a semblance of the shooter that he has been in the past, Audister can play. He's back from injury as well. But you have to get shooting from other guys, too. Those first three games that they won, Jamal Johnson was scoring like 8 or 12 points a game. Those first three games they won, Joel Awich was getting big, you know, offensive, you know, and defense. He was having really, really good games. What happened?
He dunked on that guy. Remember that game? Was that Irvine?
Maybe. No, yeah, maybe.
What was that one where he went down the lane and just...
Was that Long Beach?
I don't know.
Was that in the comeback
exactly.
against Long Beach, I think? Yeah. But you had guys who were...
That was crazy. Speaking of dunks, did your photographer from fansmanship.com get that dunk?
His name is Owen Main for that game.
Is that on Facebook? Can I go and find that on Facebook somewhere?
Facebook.com/fansmanship. There
Will
are a lot
I see
of pictures.
That dunk?
We'll talk about the pictures that were up from this last weekend in baseball.
I can see the
second.
Will Davis dunk, but
probably.
Can I see the Allwich dunk?
No, not that one, probably. I actually got a new lens recently because I was so frustrated with the fact that I wasn't getting... the close in shots, aka you know a lot of the dunks in focus. So I went out and got you know a new wider angle lens that can get you know it's better for basketball. Mm-hmm. The zoom is better for football. But I digress.
So coming soon to Fansmanship, better photos.
Hopefully, best case scenario, better photos. And so we're talking about basketball and kind of where they were and what they were doing. And I just can't. I've lost my train of thought now that you she talked about the Owich dunk.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Here we go. Jamal Johnson was scoring a lot of points. Silvestri was hitting threes and playing a lot and playing effectively. If Silvestri's not making shots though,
he's giving them up on defense.
He's giving
them
up on defense.
Good.
And
yeah,
he's
got to make up for what he's giving up on D.
The first five or six games, Cal Poly was. They were, you know, what, 4-3 or something, 4-2, 3-2 in conference. But they were also giving up a lot more foul shots than they were getting. And they're just not a team that gets to the line a whole lot. And unless David Nwaba is going to the basket, like, every single time, and he gets tired when he does that. I mean, you know, there's other things that happen. But he's the only guy, really, who slashes like that. If Eversley does, he charges a lot. And so, you know, when you have Nwaba, the guy with the ball, who doesn't shoot great from the outside, but he's the guy who can drive.
Yeah, he also spearheads their defense, too. Like, he's the head of the defense. So, yeah.
He's got to work really hard.
If he is getting fatigued, yeah, that's not a good thing.
It's not. And so you have a team with a couple of gaps that way that they have to find a way to fill. You know, they went away from their kind of 2-3 matchup zone into more of like a 1-2-2 that's less of a matchup and more just kind of a straight zone this year, or 3-2, if you want to think of it that way, with Nwaba at the top. And so
I think they should do a 1-1-2-1.
Oh, I think I should do a 1-1-1-1. One. 1-1-1-1-1. There you go. I left out a guy. There was some guy. But, like, their center doesn't draw a ton of fouls. Bennett doesn't draw a ton of fouls. Awich doesn't draw a ton of fouls. Eversley has been shooting a lot from the outside this year. I was having a chat with somebody the other day, and I said, when Chris Eversley is on the floor and he's your best outside shooter, he's a good outside shooter, and I'm really not – I think he's a great foreman. He's an all-Big West player. But when he's your best outside shooter on the floor or your most reliable outside shooter on the floor, that's not good for your team when he's playing four and he's the most reliable outside shooter, I don't think.
Yeah, and I think what you've seen is, you know, as Cal Poly, they started on that hot start. Silvestri had the big game at UCSB. I think what you're seeing now is they're playing teams and they're about to, you know, they've started already the second time around, haven't they? So they've played Long Beach twice. Oh, yeah.
They played at least two teams twice.
Yeah, now. So they're now in the second half of league play. They've seen everybody. Everyone's seen them. Maybe, I think, you know, I don't know, I'll ask you, I guess, is it a case of other teams kind of learning a little bit how to better defend Cal Poly at this point?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Now you see the limitations. I mean, because, you know, just use Nwaba's game, for example. It didn't take very long for people who, like you and me, who follow the team to know he's not going to shoot from the outside.
Right.
And I remember thinking about early on, like, how long is it going to take for the opponents to realize this guy's just not going to shoot from the outside, no matter how open you leave him open.
Yeah.
So you can sag off of him. Then so
but
that's
he has
an effective way.
And I think,
an effective way to defend them. And then
yes.
So then you see, okay, well, Silvestri came in.
Yeah.
He's a great outside shooter, but he even though he is 6'7", maybe he's not as strong
right.
in defending the post. As you know, some other guys who are more experienced, and so they, had, you know, teams are attacking him in the post. Maybe
right.
So you're learning. Okay, I don't have to play on Nwaba, so that way he doesn't go around me.
Right.
When Silvestri's in, I attack him in the post.
Sure.
And I'm not saying like those are the weak links of the team. I'm just using those guys as examples.
No,
like
yeah.
Okay, this is something they do well. Like Nwaba really drives well. So here's how we're going to counter it. We're going to not let him drive. We're going to sag off him.
It's
something that Silvestri does really well. He shoots threes. But here's how we're going to counter it. We're going to attack him on D. We're going to get him in foul trouble, get him out of the game.
And I think there are a number of things like that that, like, you and I notice. And if you and I are noticing it from a strategy standpoint, like, it must be pretty obvious, like, to Big West coaches. If I'm noticing it, you know, strategically that, like, you know, those things that you said, then obviously, you know, Dan Munson, Bob Williams are going to pick up on it as well. You know, Reggie Theus, all these guys who are actually pretty
Jeff! Good. Jeff, that's a foul, Jeff. Jeff, that's a foul.
Who's that? Is that your Reggie Theus?
That was my Reggie Theus, yeah.
He was not happy at the game at Mott.
Well, it was so funny because I remember, see, Reggie Theus to me, to older people, to maybe the generation before me, Reggie Theus is like a great NBA player. You know what I mean? Like that's what older people might remember him from. I remember him from Hang Time, the like fake Saved by the Bell TV show. Remember on NBC? It was like
but he was an actor for a while.
Yeah, yeah, he was the coach from Hang Time. So I think of Reggie Theus as the coach from Hang Time. So it was really interesting to me from that perspective to kind of watch how he coached
in
reality. You know, and he's coached in high level college. He took New Mexico State to you know make them kind of a you know regional power.
He coached in the NBA. He coached for the
he's
Kings.
He's also coached the Kings. He's coached at several levels in the NBA as an assistant and as a head coach. So. But I still think of him as the coach from Hangtime. So it was really like cool when they played against Northridge. I was watching him like, okay,
I really
want to see like what he's going to say and how he's going to act. And really, like literally most of everything he said was just that. Like he memorized the referees' names and he would yell, Jeff! That's a foul, Jeff! Jeff!
He was not happy with the way that the refs were officiating that game. And
that's
I guess
a foul!
And Cal Poly now... You
oh,
know,
he was happy by the end, I think.
Well,
not with the score,
right.
But I think he was getting the calls by the end. That was really effective. That Jeff, that's a foul, Jeff. That was really, really effective. If I ever take a job, say my son, for instance, is like 2.5 years old. If I ever coach him at any level of basketball, that I am going to get the ref's name.
You're
and
like Joe.
Yes.
Joe, that's a foul. And you got a loud voice.
Yes.
You don't even have to say it that loud.
Jeff! That's a foul. I'm just going to yell that. Although, I'll tell you this much. I covered a Cuesta game, was it last year or the
uh-huh.
year before?
Uh-huh.
And Rusty Blair, who's the coach at Cuesta,
yeah.
who must have some sort of reputation with the referees or something.
Well, he's been coaching there for 20
years
now.
Almost,
yeah.
Yeah. There was a play. It blew my socks off. Rusty said, that's a foul. And the ref teed him up.
For saying that's a foul.
For saying that's a foul. Yeah, I was shocked.
He must have been working him other ways throughout the rest of the game.
No. I was sitting right there the whole time. It was very early in the game. He just yelled, it was like the first five minutes of the game, literally. It was the first 5 minutes of the game. He yelled, "That's a foul."
Does he still have a sweet beard?
I believe so. Yeah. I think it's still going strong. Luke, that's kind of a recent development.
Yeah, I agree.
He was kind of clean shaven, but he's going with the beard the past couple of years.
Early mid 90s basketball camp at Cuesta, he was definitely clean shaven.
Yeah, well, then, he was clean shaven like 2 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
And, but yeah, so.
Go ahead.
I was shocked and thinking, like, this ref who called a technical on ref, that's a foul. I was blown away. Couldn't believe it. It was one of the biggest. Miscarriages of justice I've ever seen on a basketball court. And I'm not like a big fan of Cuesta or anything. Right. I was there just as an impartial.
J.D. Scroggin sticking up for the Cuesta Cougars.
No. I'm an impartial observer. You know what I mean? Like, I am just there to watch. I'm not there to root. I don't cheer on the, you know, press box.
And to be super critical of refs most of the time.
Mostly, that's my favorite pastime. I basically, since I can't root for or against either of the teams, I basically just root against the referees. But this one was particularly, like, this episode was particularly especially bad. Like, I couldn't believe it. I was just shocked. I remember looking, like looking at the Cuesta bench, and Rusty, like, sat, like, he got a technical, so he had to sit down.
And
he basically just said, "That's a foul." And the ref came over and gave him a technical.
That's awesome.
And then get this, like, right afterwards, like taking no lip, Rusty was just like, "What?" Uh-huh. And the guy goes, "Rusty, you sit down or you're out of here." It was like zero tolerance policy. And so within the first 5 minutes.
You gave me the stink eye. Sit your butt down.
Within the first 5 minutes, he already had a technical and had been told to sit down or he was going to get thrown out of the gym.
Sounds like somebody that's having a bad day.
I don't know. There must have been some sort of grudge between the referee and him.
I have a Rusty Blair digression, actually.
Okay, let's do it.
From this week. And I know Alex Jankowski. That's what. Jankowski, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Alex J. Jankowski. We're still working on a nickname for him. Can you think of one? I think I came up with one a couple weeks ago in the office.
Ski is a good one for anybody with the last name Ski. Yeah, Ski.
Yeah, maybe it was Polish related.
AJ.
Maybe it was Polish related. I don't remember, but like we came up with a nickname for him, and then we forgot it. I should have wrote it down. It was
AJ's
like
a good one.
He's from Buffalo, so it was like Buffalo Soldier or he's saying it was Alaskan Assassin because his previous job was in Alaska, but it was something like that. It was like
he was in Ketchikan. Is that right?
Yeah, it was a cheesy kind of nickname, but I totally forgot it.
So it was a high school question that somebody posted on Facebook that I thought was an interesting one, and it was, who's the best high school player in the history of Slo County? And you know, of course, they were talking
about high school basketball.
Yes, so they were talking about a lot of Paso kids. Actually, two of them, Ray Robbins being one, who played at Princeton and is still around here in Slo County. And Matt Knudsen, who's the coach at Atascadero, was pretty good in his day and stayed pretty good for a long time. He's lit me up at more than one, pickup game.
Is this what we take into account when we're judging who's the best Slo County player?
But I didn't see him play in college. But the dude was shooting from Sean Respert range. How about that for a reference? Like Ray Allen.
Sean Respert.
Sean Respert, Michigan State, right?
What happened to Sean? He had like a heart attack or a cancer or something. Right?
Yeah, that's right, huh? That's why he didn't play more. Well, I mean, I don't think he had great NBA skills. He could just shoot. But it seems like a shooter could stay in the NBA longer. Yeah, I think he did have a heart condition or something. The other one that came up was Jasper. And I know you saw Derek Jasper play.
Yes, I did.
Who went to Kentucky. And now we have... Well, I guess two guys, technically three in the area, but two that are technically in Slo County who are, you know, probably going to be D1 players, with Robbie Berwick going to Florida State.
Yeah.
And Adlesh, who's got offered by Cal Poly already. I like his game.
And then, I heard you guys saying that on the last one. Luke was like, Adlesh.
Yeah, he has never even seen him play, so I don't know what his deal is. But
was that like a subliminal thing? Like, are they trying?
That was just Luke trying to mess me up when I was trying to make a point.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like, you know, like you're hoping that Adlesh listens to this
Listen, I'll say this about that part, and then Cameron Walker's the other one. But he's technically not in Slo County, but. Probably the best player Santa Maria maybe has ever seen in basketball. I don't know who else has been there, but. That's what they were saying. If there was a way that Cal Poly could.
John Silver.
Hey, man, I'm trying to make a point again. You're trying to say. If there was a way.
Fish.
You can get fish at other places besides Long John Silver. Fish. I don't want greasy fish.
Fast food.
Oh my God.
And in the words of Alec Trebek, and we've hit a new low. So if there was a way that Cal Poly could instantly like get speed up like the new gym process by 10 years and get instant like crazy fan support, it would be for like two of those guys to have come to Cal Poly. And I know Berwick's already going to Florida State, but like if like Berwick and Adlish or Adlish and Walker or two of those guys, went to Cal Poly, I mean, the amount of fans they would bring in on a nightly basis would be at least 500 extra on average. Yeah. And that would be one way. And Cal Poly's never been in that position to have this many really good players around. And I can have a whole other podcast. I mean, I've had like Mike Wozniak from Three Ball, and I think that's one of the reasons why there is a little bit higher level of hoops that are going on around here now, is because kids are getting a lot more regularly. Well, they're getting a little bit more regular development. That all being said, yes, they were talking about Cameron and they were talking about some of those guys. And I think that is the way that Poly could instantly turn that around.
Check out this plot.
This plot. Okay.
This is the plot line. Next year, next year will be Walker and Adlish's senior year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So,
and they play on the same,
and neither one of them has verbally committed anywhere.
They play on the same AAU team.
Okay. So next year, after the next season, Berwick decides he's homesick and wants to transfer to Cal Poly.
That's what I said on the pod, yeah.
And both Adlish and Walker sign with Cal Poly. That is like the Cal Poly version of like Blue Chips. Like, you know what I mean? Like, remember the movie Blue Chips?
Yeah, Penny Hardaway and Shaq.
And then like the booster was like, just let me take care of it, coach. You know, like, you know, I'll get the guys. Yeah. I would be the Ed O'Neill character, the one that's like, I would be the one, like waiting for the facts in the office. Like, I don't know. They gave Ricky Rowe they gave him a tractor.
Was he an actual player?
Because
the other two were real players. Was Ricky Rowe an actor, or was he like also a college player?
Well, that was his name in the movie.
Right.
His real name is Matt Nover, and I believe he was a college basketball player, but I think he went actually pro in baseball, to be honest.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think he got drafted by the Orioles. Yeah. That would be a really
minus the scandal.
Okay. Well, you know, whatever. I mean, I can't control what happens outside of my own personal, you know, circle, but I'm just saying that would be an amazing storyline if Cal Poly was to get those two guys and then Berwick transfers in. That would be, they would be Blue Chips.
Honestly, like,
they would just need Shaq.
Shaq would be the only thing. I have to go down to the bayou.
Yeah.
Leon, remember that scene? Remember that scene when he goes down there and Shaq's playing like in some like, it's not even really a gym. It's kind of like a fish warehouse.
Uh huh. Yeah. And the rim is like made out of like duct tape.
And it's all backboards, all like, it's not even like a square wood. It's like wood planks that are like put up against there. It's a very good set design, I guess. But
he's like, I remember the rim was like cushy and big, and he was just like pulling it down, like flat down, like it was.
Because it was for him. It was made for him, because that's all he did was dunk it or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be really cool, honestly. Like, I think that's. But it's probably a pipe dream, because when you can.
It's definitely. Unless there's somebody out there willing to do some underhanded recruiting.
No, I don't know about that.
I don't know that that's going to happen. Walker's, he's getting offers from like Pac-12s.
Here's what
I
never like to root for guys to have a bad time. Well, I never like to root for guys to have a bad time. He's not going to Cal Poly as a freshman,
no,
for sure. But you know, there's always the possibility. You see it with the football team sometimes, where they'll recruit a guy. That guy will go to like a different school, like the kid from Washington State this year in football. Something will happen. He'll have a bad time there. Cal Poly has always said, hey, you know, if something happens, give us a call.
Yeah.
And they just kind of leave that door open.
Yeah. And if you're Cal Poly, you have to sow those seeds. And I think that Calero's probably doing that. Because, you know, we talked about best players in Slo County earlier, and Derek Jasper was one of the guys you brought up.
Right. So,
and he went to Kentucky, and, you know, after a couple of years there, he didn't like it. He transferred out. He said it was to get closer to home.
Right.
And then when I asked him to give me his top five schools, none of them included Cal Poly. So, I mean, he didn't want to get that close to home.
Ray Robinson said Poly didn't even recruit him.
Yeah, I don't think Cal Poly even bothered to recruit
Jasper.
At least but that's what I've heard. You know, I don't have any firsthand knowledge that Cal Poly didn't recruit him, but I've heard through the grapevine that they did not recruit him. And I don't know that it's coincidence. When he was transferring out of Kentucky, he mentioned a Big West school or two that he was thinking of transferring to. One of them was Long Beach State.
Long Beach, I was going to say,
So if you're, for some reason, if you're signing with Kentucky and you're talking about transferring out and your list of schools includes like only high profile schools like UNLV or somebody like that, But if your list also includes Long Beach State and the reason you're leaving is to get closer to home and you live in Paso Robles, Cal Poly should be on your list. Or else, if you're Cal Poly, you're putting yourself up there to be criticized. Right. And
Robbins was a good player at Princeton and obviously had the grades if he went to Princeton. So, you know, that's a question too.
I have no firsthand knowledge there with Robbins, and I haven't heard anything about it, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, so in the conversation, everybody was mentioning these more recent guys. And I said, I heard Rusty Blair was a baller in high school. I think he played at Oregon. He played at Slo-Hi, I think, back in the day. He's local. He's a local guy. And he was unstoppable, according to my father, who was around
his
age.
Who had to guard him?
Probably
at some point. When your dad was at Coast Union?
My dad was at Morro Bay. He graduated from Morro Bay High School. Yeah, he went to Santa Maria High School for a year, I think.
And so then, your dad had to guard Rusty Blair in his prime?
Maybe. I don't know. So he says. You never know. I mean, he could have been one of those things.
Why don't you get your dad on here one time and just be like, hey, what was it like when you had to guard Rusty Blair?
Let's talk about Hutt Taylor from Morro Bay High School. Yeah, I've seen the old pictures from 1969 Morro Bay team. I want to talk about baseball, too, before we go. The Cal Poly baseball team is off to a hot start. They beat Kansas State. Kansas State was 22nd in the country ranked, or 17th, or there were a couple different rankings.
I go by Baseball America, so
they're 22nd.
I believe that they were 22nd.
Have you heard that "I Believe That We Will Win" song anywhere else but Cal Poly?
Yes.
Somebody was giving me some grief. I've
they
never
do
heard
that other
else.
Places, okay, cool. Owen. Awesome. Just so you know,
I got
Cal Poly doesn't come
that.
Up with everything.
Of course,
they came out with Jamba Juice,
this
and they
me
come out with
eyes.
A couple other things.
Yeah, I understand. I just hadn't heard other places, so I'm glad to know that. I'm glad to know that that other people do that too, because I think it's a cool chant. Back to the baseball team. They swept in emphatic. In kind of dominating fashion, the Kansas State team, who I think Baseball America called, you know, they were an elite offensive team. Imhoff pitched a, you know, shutout with Reed Riley, combined shutout. The freshman Slater Lee only gave up one run, and I know that was the game that you didn't get the chance to be at, but he looked really impressive. And then Bloomquist came back and gave five innings, and if you get great performances from Imhoff and Lee, then Bloomquist doesn't have to give you many more than five innings. I mean, with your top, you know, relievers being available. What do you make of the first weekend of Cal Poly baseball? I know baseball's a long season, even in college, so it's hard to make a lot out of it, but what do you make out of this first season? This first series of the season.
I'm trying to identify like the if there's anything that Cal Poly that could have gone better for Cal Poly this opening weekend. And the only one thing I can think of is they weren't elite offensively for the first two games. They it took them a while to score in each one of them. Whereas the Sunday game, and you know, the Sunday game you're facing the teams, you know, the other team's kind of least best starter, and you know, the conditions. At bat, I'm starting to sound like Larry the way he talks. The conditions at Bagot are a little bit easier on hitting on Sundays because it's a little windier. And then the other the night games, the air is a little heavier. You know what I mean? The ball doesn't carry as much. Mm-hmm. So Sunday, you know, you kind of take the 10 runs with a little bit of a grain of salt.
Yeah.
And then the other two nights, you probably would have wanted a little bit more hard hit balls or better offense or more base hits. So I guess if you wanted to nitpick, you would say, you know, they probably would have wanted more offense the first couple of days. But, I mean, everything else was terrific. They gave up like 11 hits for the series, three runs the whole series. They didn't give up any like base stealing. They only made one error the whole series. Mm-hmm. So like everything was just roses, you know, like the pitching was terrific. They tied the program Division I single game record with Imhoff had 14 strikeouts. So, like, yeah, like, everything went perfect. So
it was really good. The one thing... Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you're Cal Poly, yeah, you might be able to nitpick and say, well, maybe this, maybe that. But, I mean, as far as outside people are concerned, like the Aaron Fitz of the world and the Perfect Game people of the world...
Kendall Rogers.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great performance. Yeah. You couldn't have done any better. So they're on the right track, and then we'll see what they do tonight. And by the time you listen to this, it's going to be over already. Yeah, against Santa Clara on Tuesday, yeah. and then they got UCLA this weekend.
Yeah, that should be fun. I thought it was interesting, and I'll talk about Nick Torres's quote in a second at the end of your article about it being personal. But I just wanted to say one thing I really noticed in this series. The first couple games, they took a while to score, but there were balls that were hit deep into the outfield that might have been trouble during a day game, I felt like. It was like foggy and kind of damp and kind of nasty, especially that Saturday night game when Pauly took a little while to score. But there were some of those guys who got balls deep into center field that if they were down the line on a nice, or, you know, to left or right during a nice day, might have had a chance that way as well. So it's not like they weren't hitting the ball well. They're just long outs in those cases that as the weather gets warmer, I think you might see more in terms of the power. I think Torres hit a home run in the only day game. The other thing I was going to say is that I'm really noticing, and I wrote about it in my post, I'm noticing that some of the freshmen, or the two freshmen from last year who played a lot, Van Gansen and Mundell. Mundell hit that double on the second double on Sunday and kind of did the big flex thing, you know, with his mm-hmm. with his arms up, like, you know, like flexing his muscles. And Van Gansen just looks totally comfortable. Last year, I felt like, hey, you have a freshman out there. He's kind of smallish. He's a little bit wide eyed. He's pretty smooth, but there were moments of uncertainty, maybe, especially, you know, even defensively for a guy who Larry Lee raves about his defense. Mundell, there were moments last year at the plate that he just looked.
Oops.
What'd you do?
I don't know. There was a noise.
Did you hear that noise? No. Maybe I did. I don't know. There were moments that Mundell looked lost. You know, as JD kicks things under the table, those are boxes that the microphone's going.
Yeah.
Mundell looked, you know, kind of lost on some off-speed stuff last year towards the middle end of the year where teams finally started to get kind of a scouting report on him. I think this year, you know, Mundell's healthy, as you alluded to in your post. Van Gansen is a year in, and he's as confident looking at shortstop as anybody now in his sophomore year. I think the thing I talked about actually on your podcast earlier that I'll talk about again is the development of guys in college that's so fun to watch. And I think those are two guys that you can see who have developed from year to year. Imhoff being on the top end of that, who's developed from his, you know, freshman to sophomore season last year. Now he's a junior and he's really, developed a lot as well. It's one of the fun things about watching a kid or watching a team at this level is that 20-year-olds develop from one year to the next. They get better over the course of months, which is really fun to see.
Good. Yeah, I'm glad that you enjoy that.
I do enjoy that.
I'm glad that you enjoy it.
You can't say that you do, but it's one of the fun things about college sports, right? You know,
I remember when I was a college sports fan, and I am sorry to say that was really not the big draw for me. For me, it was all like when I was a college sports fan. No, it was all like nationalism. You know what I mean? Like my school is better than your school.
And you were from the Valley, and you went to Fresno State, and so there was like some.
I'm from Fresno, like you grow up with the connection to the university sports program. For me, I didn't need that. I get to watch kids develop. Like, and plus, when you're young, that's the only frame of reference that I have when I was in college because I haven't been a real sports fan since then.
Right. But I want to ask you about Nick Torres too, because at the end of your article, you put a quote from him. And I don't know exactly what it was, but it was something about, you know, last year it being pretty personal as far as the way that the regional ended. There was the lost fly ball and kind of things fell apart from there for Cal Poly in the out game that they played against UCLA, right? That was the second loss that they had.
No, that was their first loss, but
it was crushing.
Yeah. It was a mental defeat as well.
I mean, they were a number of outs away. They were ahead of the team that ended up winning the College World Series. I mean, that's how close Cal Poly was last year,
and nobody beat them.
And nobody beat them from then on out.
They went undefeated the
whole time.
Yeah, UCLA made an undefeated run to the College World Series.
So then you could say that Poly got as close as anybody. They were ahead in the sixth or something like that.
Yeah, they were
right?
up 4-0, and I can't remember if it was the fifth or the sixth at that point. But it was
Jackie Robinson Stadium's lights are really low.
It was 4-0. The sun was setting. Torres lost a ball, went over. He didn't see it in the air. He said he never saw it. The sun was directly in front of him, setting on the horizon.
Right.
He missed the ball, went over his head. The bases were loaded. Had he caught it, the inning would have been over, and Cal Poly would have had a 4-0 lead going into the
sixth.
It was either the sixth or the seventh. Right. Yeah. So they're only, you know, they've got a big lead. They're only a few more outs away. They had Reed Riley, who was the closer, warming up.
He was like, going to get like a 3-inning save. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, then
the wheels
fate,
fell off.
Fate happened, and yeah, the ball was lost, and it fell, and the 3 runs scored. And then right, I think they got the fourth run. It was a base clearing triple. They got the fourth run on like a ground out, or not a ground out. It must have been a infield single or something right, like that. And, or maybe I'm getting confused, but yeah, the run scored anyway. They tied it. It was 4-4. It could have been 4-0.
Right.
Then the next, very next inning, UCLA gets 2 more runs and wins it 6-4.
Right. And so, you know, I think for a lot of Cal Poly fans, they saw that and kind of, you know, you got a feel for a kid like Nick Torres, who is probably, aside from Imhoff, and I'm not an expert, but, you know, I'd say when you look at prospect-wise at the end of this season, Torres is a junior. You know, I'd say aside from Imhoff, he's probably the highest offensive prospect on Cal Poly's team.
Offensive, yeah. You're forgetting there's still Reed Riley, and he got drafted in the 12th.
And Jimmy
round,
Allen got drafted last year too. Reed was in the 12th last year.
Yeah.
And he decided to come back anyway. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So I think you're gonna see Imhoff go high. Reed Riley has the potential to go high with a big year. Nick Torres could be a top ten
rounds.
Yeah. Right. And same with Jimmy Allen if he has a big year.
Because he was like in the 23rd or 24th round last year. And so, you know, his decision to come back wasn't as hard as maybe Riley's was. But you talk about a kid who has some motivation now this year. I'm sure Nick Torres is that guy. And based on his quote in your article, you know, it sounds like it's something that he has thought about. And it'll be interesting to see how and whether Cal Poly presses this weekend at Jackie Robinson Stadium, playing against the national champs, a team that, like you said, they were undefeated last year, but Cal Poly was the closest one to them maybe in that run. I don't know. I didn't watch all the games, so I don't know if other teams were, but being up 4-0 in the fifth to sixth inning is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Did Mundell hit a homer in that game, or was that a different game that Mundell went yard?
No, Mundell homered, I think it was the day before against San Diego.
You know, I think Cal Poly, if they win that UCLA series, I mean, they're already on the national map. They put themselves firmly in like a legitimate, they plant themselves as a legitimate team. You know, kind of all around in NCAA baseball, Division I.
Definitely.
And that's a cool thing, I think. Again, it's fun. It's more fun, and I can say this, it's more fun to go to games when you have teams that are doing well. And when you have teams that are nationally ranked against the best competition, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, the baseball team, well, you know, they play in FCS. Okay. Or, excuse me, the football team plays in FCS. Great, okay. The basketball team plays in the Big West. Oh, okay, you know, that I get that. They do play national powers, and they beat UCLA last year. But the baseball team, they're legitimately top 25 in the country against anybody. And so I think that's a pretty cool, like, it's a pretty cool thing for San Luis area sports fans, and I think it's a worthwhile thing to go out to, just to put a plug in that way. I don't know why. It was fun this weekend.
Yeah, well, if you're a baseball fan and you live in Slo County and you want to see the best and you don't go to these games,
listen to the latest Scrogcast for my take on that.
Well, I heard your guys' podcast last week, and I heard you talking about the fansmanship and what it means to be a fan and what the fan responsibility is and whatever. I think the bottom line is, you know, this is fair to say, but Cal Poly baseball is one of the highest profile sports at Cal Poly, if not the, I would say it's probably the.
Yeah, because, what's the more high profile?
Yeah, the Big West in baseball is a top, you know, 4 or 5 conference from year to year, depending on what's going on, because Fullerton's a great team. They, you know, will be in the top 5 again this year. If Cal Poly can get up there in the top 20, top 15, I mean, they can, you know, they can be that second level Big West team that maybe even gets to host a regional.
That's my question for you. Do you know whether there are things that prevent a regional from being hosted at Bagot from a structural standpoint, how many fans it holds standpoint? Are there things that prevent that from happening, or do you know?
I think that
is it a big enough stadium? Is there enough stuff there to be able to hold a regional there if Cal Poly put a bid in? Or would they have to improve Bagot to get a bid?
Well, I think that Cal Poly is probably thinking they need more seats just because they would want to sell more tickets to put in an attractive bid, because they have to you know, pay money to host. So they want to be able to make that money back somehow. And I think they're thinking they probably need more seats. I don't know that there's a restriction in place now where they can't host it because they don't have a certain number of seats. I think that they would satisfy capacity requirements now. but I think they do want to add seats.
They would want to add more just to be able to sell them and be able to make their money back.
There was some talk last season, that they were going to put in a bid to host, but it was kind of like fringe. You know what I mean? It was marginal.
They're not there every year, but now that they're getting there, maybe, I mean, they're projected to get there again this year. They can start thinking about that a little bit farther.
Yeah. If they're a top, 15 team, top 10, top 12 team, I think they would be looking to do that this year.
Have you heard about the Kruko controversy this year with the new passes?
I don't know what – you'll have to fill me on the controversy. I noticed they did some renovations. They've got a new trailer or two over there. They've changed the entrance point and
– yeah, I don't know about renovations, but they definitely have like a new fence that goes across. It looks a little fancier.
What I mean by renovations is that instead of the old lean-to white picket whatever cabinet they had there, they were giving hot dogs out of. Now they have an actual trailer.
Yeah.
Like a vending trailer.
They have two trailers. I think they just had one beer trailer and one hot dog lean-to. Now they have two trailers. And it's basically that you can't really sell your tickets on Craigslist anymore because you have to have the actual pass along with your ticket.
I did see they were checking IDs or something.
Right, right. Correct. And so there's some controversy. Hey, I might not buy season tickets now because I can't get my money back for the games I don't go to, blah, blah, blah. I think it's like probably $10 or $12 a game per ticket. When you're in Kruko's, somebody said it was going to be like 800 something for a pair of tickets, which doesn't seem horrible, especially if you go most of the time. There's probably 25, 30 home games throughout the year. I think somebody said 29 maybe. Wait, how many games do they play? They play like 50, right? So yeah, they're 25, 30 home games at least. It's kind of a controversy for people as far as whether they get tickets or not.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see this year. And something that I maybe, we'll be following up on is just, what does that look like for ticket sales? What does that look like for attendance? Has it gone up or down?
I definitely felt like this opening series, especially on Friday night, there was not as big a crowd as I was expecting, because with the quality of opponent that was coming in and with the expectations for the team, I figured it would be packed.
Like 2,000 at least, right?
Yeah, even though it's cold. It wasn't any colder than it's been in past years. So I was a little bit surprised that there wasn't a bigger turnout for the season opener.
Well, and the bummer is they go on the road.
Because of the Kruko's thing. I didn't know about that.
What do they have, like 3 straight weeks now on the road?
I think it's like 11 straight games.
Or 10 out of 11, I think. Yeah. They got one home game in a midweek game or something. But yeah, or 9 out of 10, I don't know. But I think that's going to be an interesting thing to follow when it comes to the baseball team, along with how good they're playing, and certainly they are playing well. Although, like I said, baseball's a long season. Interestingly, it was the third straight season that Cal Poly has swept their opening series. Yeah?
Yes, correct. Correct. So a guy like Nick Torres has never been on a Cal Poly baseball player without sweeping the opening series.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. J.D. Scroggin from the Slow Tribune. You can follow J.D. at Slow College Beat. You can follow if you have prep stuff that you want to follow in San Luis Obispo County, which is something JD used to do a long, long time ago in a galaxy far away. You can follow Alex Jankowski at the Prep Spots. Is that right? JD is officially nerding out with Star Wars right now. It's cool. At the Prep Spots is Alex. Is that right? Does that mean no or yes? Thank you, John Williams.
At the Press Box.
Okay, cool. And you can follow us at Fansmanship. If you have any comments or questions, things you want us to cover, people you want us to have on the podcast, let us know in the comments let us know in the comments. That's the best way to do it. Or tweet at us. And I hope you have a great day. And thanks again, JD. Sing us out.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black.